what I finally figured out, you know, blinding flash of the obvious after all these years, is everything that you need to know about you, about God, and about the world is in the first four chapters of Genesis. Everything is there. And if you recognize what you're looking at, lousy theology will have no grip on you. So, first off, the creation. The place was created, and it was created by God, and it was created for a purpose. And during Midrash, we can talk about days and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to skip by that for right now. But the important thing is this was created by someone for a purpose, and we were put in here for a purpose. What do you know about God? Well, you were created in His image. That means you can understand Him to some degree. You are in His image, therefore, the things that He does and the things that He says are things that you can understand. Now, obviously, He is way higher above us than we are, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that He does that we are, even now, not completely understanding. But the point is, you can have a relationship with God because you're in His image, and He can talk to you in terms that you understand, and you can relate to Him. You can speak. It's important. We're the only ones of the creation that we know of that can speak. Parrots do it, but you can't have an actual conversation with a parrot. They can say things, but you can speak just like God spoke. God used His voice to create things. He said, "Let there be," and there was, which is to say He created new information that didn't exist before. That's what the words are. You can do the same thing. You have a voice, which means that you are also a creator. Now, you are not a creator like He's a creator, but the whole point of being in His image and having a voice like He does is you can create things. You can introduce new information into the creation. Lots of examples of that, but one of my favorite is Johann Sebastian Bach. Guy wrote a composition every week for church, for the organ. And somebody once said Bach was conducting a conversation with his God in mathematics. And that's what those cantatas are. They're gorgeous. But he is creating new stuff, stuff that didn't exist before. God will tell you everything that you need to know. He will make that information available to you. Now, it is situation dependent. So, when we're first created, what does He tell us? You have dominion over the place. Subdue it. This is what you can eat. Don't eat that. That's all we needed to know. And He told it to us. No tricks, nothing hidden, none of that kind of stuff. He told us everything we need to know. And as history goes on and things get more and more complicated, He tells us more stuff. So He will tell Moses stuff, and that will become the Torah. He'll tell us stuff through Yeshua. He'll tell us stuff through this Holy Spirit. But God always makes sure that you have enough information to do what you need to do and stay out of trouble. He wants you to succeed. And the amount of information you get is situation dependent. I mean, for example, there's all sorts of stuff that the first couple didn't need to know. They needed to know what their diet was. They needed to know their relationship with each other. And they needed the warning about the tree. That was pretty much it. So that's what He told them. The other one is He respects your privacy. Unless God is lying, when He shows up in the garden and says, "Adam, where are you?" Or when He shows up to Cain and Abel and says, "Where's your brother?" Unless He's lying or trying to trick us, He doesn't know. Now, He can find out. He's got the ability to find out anything He wants. But in this first vignette, it is not the case that He is spying on everything and everybody that's going on. He just doesn't do that. And the final thing is He's patient. So as we make our mistakes, as we do, He's patient and doesn't destroy us instantly. Let's look at free will. I was reading a rabbi on Aish, who I haven't read in a while, but he's really quite good. And one of the things that he said that I thought was very good was that nullifying man's free will amounts to destroying him, because the ability to determine his own choices is not one of the facets of man, it is his very essence. So let's talk about that, free will. Essential to being human, because you are made in the image of God. God has free will, so do you. You can decide whether or not to take his advice. And I've said this before lots of times, in biblical Hebrew, there is no word for command or order. They're all variations on Shema, which is, listen to me, I'm giving you some advice, listen, as opposed to, you will do it or I will squash you like a bug. That doesn't exist in Torah and biblical Hebrew. So you get to decide whether or not you're going to follow his advice. But then you are responsible for the consequences of your decision. The other thing that we learn from this is we have an adversary, and that's Satan. So let's take a look at the vignettes one at a time. The first one is the garden. The essential characters in the garden is first the tree. The tree is deadly. The tree is desirable. And the tree is available. Now, we know from a later vignette that had God wanted to do that, he could have parked a lawn chair by that tree and parked a cherub in the lawn chair, and every time somebody came near the tree, cherub stands up with his flaming sword. Oh no, don't do that. He didn't do that. The tree's in the middle of the garden. It's beautiful. It's desirable. He tells you it's deadly, but he doesn't put a bug zapper around it so that anytime anybody approaches the tree, you get mild shock and say, well, I'm reminding you, it doesn't do that. That's important. The snake. The snake wants you dead. Understand that. The snake lies. Because the first thing that he says to the woman is, no, you won't surely die. That isn't going to happen. God's just overemphasizing here. Hyperbole. You're not going to die. And then finally, he understands your nature. He understands how to appeal to you. He understands how to get you to do things that will destroy you. The next actor is the woman. The woman made a metaphorical fence around the tree. And by the way, that's what the rabbis do in their oral Torah, and that's what every religion in the world does. God's got some really simple basic command. Don't eat the tree. Well, not only don't eat it, but don't touch it. He didn't say anything about not touching it. The woman added that. Now, why she did that, I don't know, but it's a very human trait, is to put fences around the commandments. And the idea is, if you don't touch it, you certainly can't eat it. She coveted the fruit. And the reason she coveted the fruit is because it promised to give her wisdom. If she eats of the fruit, she gets something, and so she covets it, even though she knows, or should know, that it's deadly. And what the snake does is, well, it's not really deadly. You're not going to surely die. So that gives her then the ability to exercise her covetousness. I want that wisdom. And, well, I mean, there's a possibility I won't actually die. I mean, maybe God was just being dramatic. So she rationalized because of her covetousness. She engaged in wishful thinking. I can have this thing that I want that will make me wise, and it'll be okay. That's rationalization. We're really good at that, by the way. And then finally, she followed, the rabbis would call it her Yetzer Torah, her evil inclination. And we've talked about that lots of times before. The evil inclination is not really evil. It is the part of you that allows you to focus on this world. You're a being in several parts. You got the part of you that's connected to God, but you've also got the part of you that's connected to the world. And as you go through life, there's this constant play back and forth. Are you going to listen to the part of you that's connected to God, or are you going to listen to the part of you that's connected to the world? And she listened to the part of her that's connected to the world. The next of our players is the man. The man was not deceived. That's 1 Timothy 2:14. Paul says, the man wasn't deceived, even though the woman was. So what the man did was followed his beloved into mortality. She became mortal. So he followed her into mortality voluntarily. And the idea then was, as they came together and had offspring, eventually one of their sons, thousands of years in the future, would in fact effect redemption. But between then and Yeshua, mortality was irreversible. Consequences. God says, if you eat it, you're going to die. You ate it, you become mortal. You are going to be mortal now forever until the promised son finally comes and backs that out. And oh, by the way, he isn't going to back it out in this world. He's going to back it out in the next. The next player is God. What have you done? In other words, he isn't spying on them. He isn't watching. And of course, consequences. I told you not to eat of it because you're going to die, so now you're mortal. But the other thing that is in there is mercy. These folks are sewing together fig leaves, right? God says, no. You're going to be out in the world now. You're going to need more protection than that. So what he does is he slaughters an animal and makes them clothing to protect them as they go out in the world. So God is making them live with the consequences of their decision, but God is also providing them with the means to ameliorate that so that they will be able to live in this world that they have now been thrown out into without scuffing up their knees. So the provision of clothing to these people is God's way of ameliorating the results of their bad decision. They're still mortal. You're going to continue to be mortal. That's until Yeshua comes. But I'll give you some pants so that you don't skin your knees up, and I'll give you some shoes so you don't bruise your feet. What God does is he doesn't back out the consequences of your decision, but what he does is he provides things for you so that you can continue to grow and thrive and do the things that he wants you to do. So you learn a great deal about the character of God in this series of vignettes. You've learned that you can understand him. You've learned that he's a creator. You've learned that he respects your privacy. You've learned that he's patient. And you've learned that, yeah, you're going to mess up, but he will provide opportunities for you to recover somewhat from the consequences of your bad decisions. Don't get me wrong, you're still mortal, but you don't have to be terribly miserable in that process. So the next vignette is the brothers. The close relationship there is important because the fact that one brother is willing to murder the other tells you something about human relationships. In other words, if this is a Hun over here and a Chinaman over here and they meet and they decide to kill each other, well, that's one story, which happens, by the way. But what we have here are two brothers who've grown up together, who know each other, and yet one of them is willing to kill the other. And again, what God does is he comes and says, what have you done? So God doesn't have an angel hovering around these two to keep them from doing something bad. They have the ability to do that. Again, free will. And then consequences. So the consequences are the earth is no longer going to yield its strength, and you're going to be scattered upon the earth. And Cain then whines, that's too much. And God says, okay, and ameliorates it by putting a mark on him so that he doesn't get murdered. Cain has made a bad decision, murdered his brother. There's going to be consequences here, but I'm not going to let you be killed by any random stranger. I'm going to put a mark on you to protect you. So God, again, ameliorates the results of our bad behavior. So, the essence of being human is the ability to choose, which is free will. One of the things to notice in the first vignette in the garden, eating of the fruit was not Eve's idea. Somebody suggested it to her. What that means is a lot of times Satan or other people are going to make suggestions to you that are intended to lead you astray. Notice that the decision that Eve was asked to make was presented in positive terms. The snake didn't come up and say, "Hey babe, how about suicide?" Didn't do that. What he said is, "Oh, this is desirable. This will make you wise. This will make you like a god. All of these wonderful things that are going to happen as a consequence of your doing this." And by the way, you see that all the time in churches. Well, gee, everybody needs love. So the fact that God says, don't do that stuff, yeah, but look at all the good stuff that will happen and so forth. So we rationalize things. And because we rationalize things, because they are presented with a positive spin, we wind up dead. That's where it ultimately leads. But notice the tactics. Notice how the enemy works. Because he still works the same way, because we're still just as vulnerable to those kinds of approaches as we've ever been. One of the things about the first two vignettes is it tells us something about our nature and about God's purpose. Most of you, many of you are parents, some of you are not, but you all have experience with two-year-olds. Two-year-olds do egregious stuff all the time. And if you killed your two-year-old the first time you spread jam on the cat, the race would die out. So you don't. What you do is you swat him on the diaper and you say, no, don't do that. In other words, there are consequences for your behavior. And in that process, one hopes that he learns. So what's happening with God here is he gave us a choice, free will. Once we made the wrong choice, what he does is lets us live with the consequences, but ameliorates the results of that choice so that we have the opportunity to learn and grow. That's how people learn, is by making mistakes. I read one of these little internet things that the master of a subject has failed more times than the novice has even tried. True. That's how we learn. And that's what we're seeing here in these first two vignettes. Last thing is we see a lot about human nature in these two events. And specifically, we have two separate problems that are endemic to humanity. One is envy and the other is covetousness. Now, obviously those are two different things, otherwise we wouldn't need two different words. Envy is about people. Covetousness is about things. So, some of you out there have beautiful voices and can sing. I was not wired that way. It would certainly be possible for me to envy those of you who can sing, because I can't do it. And as we see in the case of Cain and Abel, that was a case of envy. Abel had the favor of God, Cain did not. He envied him. There was no thing involved. Just you have status that I don't have, or talent that I don't have, or something like that, and I envy you, and envy leads to murder, as we just saw. Covetousness, on the other hand, was Eve's problem, because she saw a thing that was forbidden to her, and she wanted that thing. So if I look at Mike, and Mike has a Ferrari, and Ooh, I really like Mike's Ferrari. I am coveting his Ferrari. I am not envying Mike. I mean, they're overlapped. I may envy Mike because he's got enough wherewithal to buy a Ferrari. But the distinction is, envy is for people, covetousness is for things. Those are the first two sins. Paul says that covetousness is idolatry. So then what you know in this first four chapters is everything that you need to know. You've got free will, God's character, humanity's character, and what the two foundational sins are for everything else. You've got it all. So you can all quit reading the rest of it. No. Obviously, I'm kidding. Because the other part of the book, the rest of it, remember I said God will give you every bit of information that you need. And so the rest of the book is incremental provisions of information as we need it. So the first thing that happens, of course, is God gets Israel out of Egypt and gives them the Torah, information that they need. Israel goes along for a while and falls into all sorts of problems. God ameliorates those problems. He sends them into exile, but he takes care of them in exile. And then finally we get Yeshua, who gives us more information. And then we get the Holy Spirit, who gets us more information. So the rest of the book is obviously very useful. But the fundamentals of everything are in that first four vignettes. One other thing, and we've said this lots of times, and those of you who have been around for a while have heard it lots of times. When God is talking about the tree, he says that tree is deadly. What he does not say is, if you eat of that tree, I will kill you. Big difference. That's deadly. Don't eat it. As opposed to, that's my tree, touch it and I'll kill you. He doesn't say that. It's a very important distinction. And as we go along, understand that you have got everything that you need available to you to navigate in this world. He's made it available to you. Now, just like Eve, it is possible to ignore that advice, which is to say, a whole lot of the world, and some of them have got Bibles in their house that have never been opened. Others of them don't even have Bibles in their house. But the point is, the information is available. He doesn't make you access it. So when Eve has got the wrong impression of the tree, we're not to eat it, we're not even to touch it. That's an error. God doesn't come in and say, no, 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 that's not what I said. What I said was this. He doesn't do that. He makes the information available, and whether or not you choose to use it is up to you. Whether or not you choose to obey him is up to you. However, you get to choose whether you will obey or listen to him. What you don't get to choose are the consequences of your decisions. So it was not possible for Eve to ignore the advice not to eat that tree, and then, when she did it, to say, wait a minute, I don't want those consequences. You don't get to choose that. You get to choose whether you follow his advice. The consequences for either doing so or not are not something you get to choose. So the last thing in here, and I'll close, what does Moses say at the end of Deuteronomy? I have set before you blessing and curse, life and death. Therefore, choose life. That's what God is saying to Eve and Adam in the garden. I have set before you life and blessing, the tree of life and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Choose life. That's God's message to us in all cases. Choose life.